Chapter 8. On board the Albatross, when will man cease to crawl in the depths, to live in the azure and quiet of the sky? To this question of Camille Flammarion's the answer is easy. It will be when the progress of mechanics has enabled us to solve the problem of aviation. And in a few years, as we can foresee, a more practical utilization of electricity will do much towards that solution. In 1783, before the Montgolfier brothers had built their fire balloon, and Charles, the physician, had devised his first aerostat, a few adventurous spirits had dreamt of the conquest of space by mechanical means. The first inventors did not think of apparatus lighter than air, for that the science of their time did not allow them to imagine. It was to contrivances heavier than air, to flying machines in imitation of the birds, that they trusted to realize aerial locomotion. This was exactly what had been done by that madman Icarus, the son of Daedalus, whose wings, fixed together with wax, had melted as they approached the sun. But without going back to mythological times, without dwelling on Architas of Tarentum, we find, in the works of Dante of Perugia, of Leonardo da Vinci and Guidotti, the idea of machines made to move through the air. 2 centuries and a half afterwards inventors began to multiply. In 1742 the Marquis de Bacqueville designed a system of wings, tried it over the Seine, and fell and broke his arm. In 1768 Pogton conceived the idea of an apparatus with 2 screws, suspensive and propulsive. In 1781 Mirwain, the architect of the Prince of Baden, built an orthopteric machine, and protested against the tendency of the aerostats which had just been invented. In 1784 Lannoy and Bienvenu had maneuvered a helicopter worked by springs. In 1808 there were the attempts at flight by the Austrian Jacques Degen. In 1810 came the pamphlet by Denian of Nantes, in which the principles of heavier than air are laid down. From 1811 to 1840 came the inventions and researches of Derblinger, Vigouault, Sardi, Dubuchet, and Cagnier de Later. In 1842 we have the Englishman Henson, with his system of inclined planes and screws worked by steam. In 1845 came Cassis and his ascensional screws. In 1847 came Camille Wirt and his helicopter made of bird's wings. In 1852 came Letter with his system of guidable parachutes, whose trial cost him his life. And in the same year came Michel Loup with his plan of gliding through the air on 4 revolving wings. In 1853 came Belaguic, and his aeroplane with the traction screws, Vossen Chardens with his guidable kite, and George Cawley with his flying machines driven by gas. From 1854 to 1863 appeared Joseph Pline with several patents for aerial systems. Brint, Carlingford, Labris, Du Temple, Bright, whose ascensional screws were left-handed, Smithies, Panayfu, Krosnier, and C. At length, in 1863, thanks to the efforts of Nader, a society of heavier than air was founded in Paris. There the inventors could experiment with the machines, of which many were patented. Ponton Damacard and his steam helicopter, Lalandel and his system of combining screws with inclined planes and parachutes, Lowry and his aeroscape, Esterno and his mechanical bird, Groof and his apparatus with wings worked by levers. The impetus was given, inventors invented, calculators calculated all that could render aerial locomotion practicable. Burkert, Labris, Kaufman, Smith, Stringfellow, Prigent, Danjard, Poms and de La Paz, Moy, Penaud, Jobert, Horo de Villeneuve, Achenbach, Garapin, Duchesne, Dangeron, Pariasel, Duade, Melkisoff, Forlanini, Beery, Tatton, Dandrieu, Edison, some with wings or screws, others with inclined planes, imagined, created, constructed, perfected, their flying machines, ready to do their work, once there came to be applied to thereby some inventor a motor of adequate power and excessive lightness. This list may be a little long, but that will be forgiven, Therefore, it is necessary to give the various steps in the ladder of aerial locomotion, on the top of which appeared Robber the Conqueror. Without these attempts, these experiments of his predecessors, how could the Inquirer have conceived so perfect an apparatus? And though he had but contempt for those who obstinately worked away in the direction of balloons, he held in high esteem all those partisans of heavier than air, English, American, Italian, Austrian, French, and particularly French, whose work had been perfected by him, and led him to design, and then to build, this flying engine known as the Albatross, which he was guiding through the currents of the atmosphere. The pigeon flies, had exclaimed one of the most persistent adepts at aviation. They will crowd the air as they crowd the earth, said one of his most excited partisans. From the locomotive to the aeromotive, shouted the noisiest of all, who had turned on the trumpet of publicity, to awaken the old and new worlds. Nothing, in fact, is better established, by experiment and calculation, than that the air is highly resistant. A circumference of only a yard in diameter in the shape of a parachute, can not only impede descent in air, but can render it asynchronous. That is a fact. It is equally well known, that when the speed is great the work of the weight varies in almost inverse ratio to the square of the speed, and therefore becomes almost insignificant. It is also known, that as the weight of a flying animal increases, the less is the proportional increase in the surface beaten by the wings, in order to sustain it, although the motion of the wings becomes slower. A flying machine must therefore be constructed to take advantage of these natural laws, to imitate the bird, that admirable type of aerial locomotion, according to Dr. Marcy, of the Institute of France. In short, the contrivances likely to solve the problem are of three kinds. 1. Helicopters or spearlifers, which are simply screws with vertical axes. 2. Ornithopters, machines which endeavor to reproduce the natural flight of birds. 3. Aeroplanes, which are merely inclined planes like kites, but towed or driven by screws. Each of these systems has had and still has its partisans obstinately resolved to give way in not the slightest particular. However, Robber, for many reasons, had rejected the two first. The ornithopter, or mechanical bird, offers certain advantages, no doubt. That the work and experiments of M. Renard in 1884 have sufficiently proved. But, as has been said, it is not necessary to copy nature servilely. Locomotives are not copied from the air, nor are ships copied from the fish. To the first we have put wheels which are not legs, to the second we have put screws which are not fins. And they do not do so badly. Besides, what is this mechanical movement in the flight of birds, whose action is so complex? Has not Dr. Marcy suspected, that the feathers open during the return of the wing so, as to let the air through them? And is not that rather a difficult operation for an artificial machine? On the other hand, aeroplanes have given many good results. Screws opposing a slanting plane to the bed of air will produce an ascensional movement, and the models experimented on have shown that the disposable weight, that is to say the weight it is possible to deal with as distinct from that of the apparatus, increases with the square of the speed. Herein the aeroplane has the advantage over the aerostat, even when the aerostat is furnished with the means of locomotion. Nevertheless, Robber had thought that the simpler his contrivance the better, and the screws the St. Helices that had been thrown in his teeth at the Weldon Institute had sufficed for all the needs of his flying machine. One series could hold it suspended in the air, the other could drive it along under conditions that were marvelously adapted for speed and safety. If the ornithopter, striking like the wings of a bird, raised itself by beating the air, the helicopter raised itself by striking the air obliquely with the fins of the screw as it mounted on an inclined plane. These fins, or arms, are in reality wings, but wings disposed as a helix instead of as a paddle wheel. The helix advances in the direction of its axis. Is the axis vertical? Then it moves vertically. Is the axis horizontal? Then it moves horizontally. The whole of Robert's flying apparatus depended on these two movements, as will be seen from the following detailed description, which can be divided under three heads: the platform, the engines of suspension and propulsion, and the machinery. Platform. This was a framework 800 feet long and 12 wide, a ship's deck in fact, with a projecting prow. Beneath was a hull solidly built, enclosing the engines, stores, and provisions of all sorts, including the water tanks. Round the deck a few light uprights supported a wire trellis that did duty for bulwarks. On the deck were three houses, whose compartments were used as cabins for the crew, or as machine rooms. In the center house was the machine which drove the suspensory helices, in that forward was the machine that drove the bow screw, in that aft was the machine that drove the stern screw. In the bow were the cook's galley and the crew's quarters. In the stern were several cabins, including that of the engineer, the saloon, and above them all a glass house in which stood the helmsman, who steered the vessel by means of a powerful rudder. All these cabins were lighted by portholes filled with toughened glass, which has 10 times the resistance of ordinary glass. Beneath the hull was a system of flexible springs to ease off the concussion when it became advisable to land. Engines of suspension and propulsion. Above the deck rose 37 vertical axes, 15 along each side, and 7, more elevated, in the center. The albatross might be called a clipper with 37 masts. But these masts instead of sails bore each 2 horizontal screws, not very large in spreader diameter, but driven at prodigious speed. Each of these axes had its own movement independent of the rest, and each alternate one spun round in a different direction from the others, so as to avoid any tendency to gyration. Hence the screws as they rose on the vertical column of air retained their equilibrium by their horizontal resistance. Consequently the apparatus was furnished with 74 suspensory screws, whose 3 branches were connected by a metallic circle which economized their motive force. In front and behind, mounted on horizontal axes, were 2 propelling screws, each with 4 arms. These screws were of much larger diameter than the suspensory ones, but could be worked at quite their speed. In fact, the vessel combined the systems of Cossus, Lalandel, and Ponton Damakert, as perfected by Robber. But it was in the choice and application of his motive force that he could claim to be an inventor. Machinery. Robber had not availed himself of the vapor of water or other liquids, nor compressed air and other mechanical motion. He employed electricity, that agent which one day will be the soul of the industrial world. But he required no electromotor to produce it. All he trusted to was piles and accumulators. What were the elements of these piles, and what were the assets he used, Robber only knew. And the construction of the accumulators was kept equally secret. Of what were their positive and negative plates? None can say. The engineer took good care, and not unreasonably, to keep his secret unpatented. One thing was unmistakable, and that was that the piles were of extraordinary strength, and the accumulators left those of 4 cell and Volkmer very far behind in yielding currents whose amperes ran in 2 figures up to then unknown. Thus there was obtained a power to drive the screws, and communicate a suspending and propelling force in excess of all his requirements under any circumstances. But it is as well to repeat that this belonged entirely to Robber. He kept it a close secret. And, if the president and secretary of the Weldon Institute did not happen to discover it, it would probably be lost to humanity. It need not be shown that the apparatus possessed sufficient stability. Its center of gravity proved that at once. There was no danger of its making alarming angles with the horizontal, still less of its capsizing. And now for the metal used by Robber in the construction of his aeronef, a name which can be exactly applied to the albatross. What was this material, so hard that the bowie knife of Phil Evans could not scratch it, and Uncle Prudent could not explain its nature? simply paper. For some years this fabrication had been making considerable progress. Unsized paper, with the sheets impregnated with dextrin and starch and squeezed in hydraulic presses, will form a material as hard as steel. There are made of it pulleys, rails, and wagon wheels, much more solid than metal wheels, and far lighter. And it was this lightness and solidity which Robber availed himself of in building his aerial locomotive. Everything, framework, hull, houses, cabins were made of straw paper turned hard as metal by compression, and what was not to be despised in an apparatus flying at great heights incombustible. The different parts of the engines and the screws were made of gelatinized fiber, which combined in sufficient degree flexibility with resistance. This material could be used in every form. It was insoluble in most gases and liquids, acids, or essences, to say nothing of its insulating properties, and it proved most valuable in the electric machinery of Albatross. Robber, his mate Tom Turner, an engineer and two assistants, two steersmen and a cook, eight men all told formed the crew of the aeronef, and proved ample for all the maneuvers required in aerial navigation. There were arms of the chase and of war, fishing appliances, electric lights, instruments of observation, compasses, and sextants for checking the course, thermometers for studying the temperature, different barometers, some for estimating the heights attained, others for indicating the variations of atmospheric pressure, a storm glass for forecasting tempests, a small library, a portable printing press, a field piece mounted on a pivot, breech loading and throwing a 3-inch shell, a supply of powder, bullets, dynamite cartridges, a cooking stove, warmed by currents from the accumulators, a stock of preserves, meats and vegetables sufficient to last 4 months. Such were the outfit and stores of the aeronef in addition to the famous trumpet. There was besides a light India rubber boat, in submersible, which could carry 8 men on the surface of a river, a lake, or a calm sea. But were there and parachutes in case of accident? No. Robber did not believe in accidents of that kind. The axes of the screws were independent. The stoppage of a few would not affect the motion of the others, and if only half were working, the Albatross could still keep afloat in her natural element. And with her, said Robber to his guests in spite of themselves, a master of the seventh part of the world, larger than Africa, Abyssinia, Asia, America, and Europe, this aerial Icarian Sea, which millions of Icarians will one day people. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.